everybody. I want to just start by thanking my predecessors at the podium. I think they've done a really fantastic job of laying out the options for action for the public health community, starting at the individual level, moving to the local public health level, to the federal public health level, and just in the last presentation, a way for the public health community to engage in a place that maybe it doesn't always engage, which is really the federal and international policy arena. And I think that they've really set this up extremely well. I'm going to confess that I have no financial conflicts of interest, but I do have a very strong agenda, and that is to get the APHA to step outside of perhaps its usual comfort zone and to engage on some of the things we've just heard about, especially in the last presentation, and to take a stand and be the voice of public health in where it really matters. Thank you. And so pursuant to that, I want to thank everybody in this room, in this very full room. I'm delighted to have this room full. I want to let you all know that there will be three other sessions in the annual meeting of APHA on climate change and public health. There will be one at 4:30 this afternoon dealing with built environment issues. We're going to have a plenary session that's going to take place at 10:30 tomorrow morning with some of the same speakers. And then there will be a session at 2:30 organized by EPA to talk about some of the latest research going on in urban public health. So I urge you to check out your programs and to attend all of those. It is an honor to have John Patz in the audience. I was going to start with a little bit of background on APHA. This is the policy that John was lead author on. It dates, you can see by the first two digits, from 1995. And I just want to highlight some of the elements in this concluding statement from that policy. It did say that the public health community needs to act, so there certainly was a call to action. The action steps in 1995, though, were more along the lines of, we need to study this, we need to do some modest things for prevention, we need to be checking it out, monitoring, and assessing. And it was in reference to a long-term intergenerational public health issue. And we certainly heard that there is a long-term intergenerational aspect to this, but what I want to highlight is that we're no longer in a time frame where we talk about intergenerational and long-term. In the future, we are in a setting of urgency and emergency. And this is just a picture of Tuvalu, one of the low-lying island states. And this is not a hurricane. This is a high-tide flood that's occurring as this island slowly disappears under rising seas. So first point, it's here and now. It's not something that we are worried about happening 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, although obviously we worry about the extent of what is going to happen 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now. With regards to APHA, as we all know, this organization focuses on its three strategic priorities, and everything is geared towards these. And I think that these three priorities fit very, very well with the climate change agenda, as we learned from Katrina. If there was ever a demonstration that access to care and the existence of public health infrastructure is going to be critical as we face the future challenges of climate change, it was Katrina, as well as the issue of disparities. And this is just a slide showing the distribution of people living below twice the poverty threshold throughout New Orleans. And if you take a look, this is a kind of a dramatic thing, if you take a look at the areas that were inundated, and I'll see if I can go back, you'll see that the dark colors line up pretty well. And so we all who have looked at the aftermath of Katrina have noted how the bulk of the suffering was by the most poor people in New Orleans. And that suffering goes on now with the Katrina diaspora who are spread throughout the country. And so what I want to just go through is a resolution that is working its way through the climate process on climate change. We've updated our resolution from 1995, and we start with this idea that, well, we said 10 years, but that was a few years ago, as Brian mentioned, so we have a ticking clock, and it's more like 7 or 8 years. And so the current resolution that is on the books calls for a slate of actions, and I just wanted to discuss these very briefly. The first is it calls for the public health community taking a voice on mitigation, which is new, different, and I think we've got some discussion of exactly the best way to do that. The second is to emphasize tracking and surveillance, to bring our public health expertise to public health adaptation, and as we've talked about, to delineating, assessing, and publicizing the health co-benefits. The resolution calls for a cap on carbon. It asserts the freedom from harm from climate change as a basic human right. And I think this is one area where this organization has a very, very powerful role to play. We have sections on international health, on infectious diseases, on maternal and child health that are very much concerned with health of people in developing countries. They need to get involved, and their voices need to be heard as we talk about the international aspects of climate change, and especially as we are entering into negotiations like Bali, where the developing countries are not going to participate without their immediate health needs being addressed. An organization like APHA really has an important role to play there. There's obviously a need for strengthening public health infrastructure and training, regardless of climate change, and we've heard from Dr. McBride about the need to incorporate climate change into that public health infrastructure and training. We all need to be role models. That's incorporated in this resolution. And there's a phrase that's at the end of the resolution that says that whereas in 1995 we were saying this is an area that is very critical for us to do more monitoring and research, in 2007 the statement says that research, monitoring, assessment of the long-term intergenerational aspects is critical, but it must not delay action now. And so what I want to leave you with and leave time, and I did not want to go a full 15 minutes, but to leave the rest of the time in our session is to talk about some of the potentials for action as an organization and to get some input. And I'm going to take a little bit of time going through this. We've talked about the other sessions that we're going to have today. There will also be a press conference taking place tomorrow at noon, at which it will be announced that the theme for the next Public Health Week is going to be climate change. This presents us, and I'm probably going to get in a boatload of trouble for scooping that, but it has been announced actually in the nation's health. That affords us a really incredibly powerful opportunity to mobilize, to organize, and to really get a message out in a very disseminated way, as well as in a federal way. Obviously, there are roles that APHA can play in developing educational materials and in fostering education and training. We need to think about how we engage on these congressional activities. I think Tim has laid out the argument for why we should, for the fact that if we're not at the table, that, you know, if we're not dealing with some of these minutiae of economic decisions, that public health will be left out. We've already seen a bill that's gone in for a commission on studying adaptation that left out public health. If we're not there, it will not happen. We've talked a little bit about collaborative activities, and I want to emphasize the need for collaboration across the world of public health, like the collaboration going on right now with NACHO and Environmental Defense and other organizations, including APHA. I really want to see if we can make collaboration within APHA work among these large sections devoted to these issues, and also the kind of collaboration that Tim has highlighted, the getting out of our usual boxes, collaborations with the evangelical community, with affected communities in a variety of types, will be essential for actually making political change happen. And then the last avenue for action is the greening of the organization itself. We have a very active green committee that I know very little about, except that they fight every year to make the annual meeting as green as it can be. It's always an uphill battle. Tried to truck it in, but there's a lot more we can do. And obviously, an annual meeting itself has a huge carbon footprint just from the 10,000 attendees who are showing up. So ways of conducting business that are remote and virtual, you know, is another thing the organization can think about. So with that, I'm going to stop talking, and I really invite a vibrant discussion of some of the issues we've heard about. Thank you.
Thank you so much, John. And now, given that this meeting is being recorded, I will repeat questions. I would appreciate those of you who ask questions to first identify yourselves. I should say also, I'm looking around the room, there's so many people in this room who have been leaders, national leaders on this issue, and I thought about introducing you all, and then I thought I'm going to miss somebody if I do that, so I'm not going to, but I'll call on you first. You know, we might want to plan a session for APHA on this. It's not on the list, but I think we could have more sessions next year. Yes. It's actually usually the biggest wedge, but you want to take that one?
I'm pointing out that conservation has the purest public health co-benefit as well, that when we talk about alternative fuels, there's always an alternative downside to it. Conservation efficiency, reduction of the demand side, generally has the highest net health co-benefit.
I'd like to go to the next speaker. I apologize. There's so many hands up. Yes. Anybody want to tackle that one? Howie?
Thank you.
All right, question here. Interesting suggestion. Yes. You want to go for it, Brian? If I may say, when the government is directly subsidizing anything, then it's hard to say it's a market-based direction. And so, it's one of the things I've never understood is why some energy supplies are subsidized, like oil and petroleum exploration production is subsidized as well. So, there are no major energy sources that are unsubsidized, and except, you know, some of the sources that we'd all like to see more of don't receive as much subsidy. So, anyway, Bob, you want to? I don't know about you, Bob. I can remember when people used to smoke at APHA meetings and other public health meetings. You think it's funny? They did. Yes. Thank you. Betty want to address that, or Paul?
We have another transportation bill being negotiated right now. The last transportation bill, these issues came up. The oil industry is a strong industry, the automobile industry and the oil industry and the road building industry together present a formidable political challenge. A lot of you are aware of how the oil industry and the road building industry and the automobile industry killed the public transit industry 50 years ago. They're not anxious to see it be revived, but there is an opportunity there for the public health community to get engaged. There are, talk about skewed subsidy systems. There are very skewed subsidy systems there that we can correct. And we've been making incremental progress over the last 15 years. I think climate change may be an impetus, along with the new public health information on near roadway on air pollution effects, to push us, but it is politically conceivable.
So it could be another thing to add to the list, and I don't think it's in the APHA resolution that APHA is involved with transportation legislation. And why not? Why isn't public health to be involved in the legislation? Because are we there when the deals are cut? No, we're not. I want to turn to the panel at this point to see if there are last points you want to make. I know some of them were struggling to get in during the questions to see if there were. Yes, Dr. McBride. That. Any other parting thoughts from the panel members? Brian? Didn't say much. Okay, it is now noon, so it is time for us to adjourn the session. Thank you very much.